Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our Record Room podcast. I know it's been a while. I've been really busy with unforeseen stuff in the background, but we're back again for a community of practice one. So we're talking to industry professionals, people who are in the industry doing stuff. And I've got a special guest with me today. And do you want to introduce yourself?
My name is Ashley Samuels McKenzie. Many years in video production and music production, and now a media lead at In Music and Media, and a founder and owner of Coconut Paradise Caribbean Restaurant too.
Oh, amazing. Thank you for passing through. This one was proudly sponsored by Mark Dean, an inspiration for getting us the hookup for. But let's start with the origins, because that's what I like. What got you into music? What got you into that passion with music? So, because I'm sure this is going to be a very, very interesting story, because everyone's story is different.
Yeah, I would say, wow. Grew up in the era of cable TV, MTV Base, The Box, VH1.
Yeah.
Where you could absorb so much music, you know, go out and buy CDs every other weekend, inspired by the rise of garage and artists like So Solid Crew. And I think it was when 8 Mile came out for me. That was when I remember a few of us were in year 8 at school and someone suggested that we have an 8 Mile tournament competition. I think there was 8 people in it actually, so we managed to get numbers, but no one was very good, but it kind of, you know, it inspired us to do something. And then from there, I started writing a few lyrics and started trying to deliver them with some of my friends. We were recording on we didn't have a microphone, so we had to record on a camcorder and then put it through an aux cable to record it in.
Yeah.
It was quite rudimental, but we kept going. And then I remember one day I was walking up to school and I had a certain jacket on. And it was complimented by a kid that went to college. And then he's like, can you rap? And I was like, I don't know, kind of. And then we started to freestyle up the road. And then for the next few months, we'd meet up every Tuesday or Thursday, whenever it was. And we'd meet at the bottom of the hill and we'd walk all the way up, freestyle with him. And that kind of helped me build my confidence and build my skill level. And then from there, I started to record a few tracks at home. And this is at the beginning of the kind of MSN wave. I recorded a tune at home and I sent it to another rapper and he kind of remixed it and started sending it out. So he did a shout out on it, put a filter on it. And then from there, people started to add me and be like, yo, I heard your song, et cetera. And that was the kind of the wheels in motion for me to then become a recording artist and send music out at the kind of bass level. And it was a time in the town where there was a lot of grime artists, a lot of people making music, which was inspiring. Everyone had at least 8 bars. And then from there, I kind of went through school, had a few really good experiences. And this is where I first kind of, I was first benefited by what Daniel was doing.
Yeah.
Because he ran a project called Dreams to Reality. Mm-hmm. And what it did is it got young artists that are just developing, got a few songs to build up their music and then perform at different venues within the town. And these events would then be us supporting artists that were big at the time, like N-Dubs, Skepta, Temps, Ghetto. There's quite a few different artists that we got to support. And that was the kind of first foray that I had within some of the projects that Daniel had been doing involving school age young people. From there, I then decided I wanted to go to university, but I chose to pick film technology as what I'd learned, because I thought that, you know, music was there, it's always a passion of mine, it's always in my heart. But with film and learning those skills, I could marry both of them up into, you know, something else. So then I studied film technology, started making music videos and connecting the two worlds together that I'd learned.
Wow, that's an incredible story. And who would you say, besides maybe that, who would you say were your early inspirations and people that you said, you know what, if I could be like this person, because I think we're really big on mentors and mentors, I would say, if I could be like this person, who could I be? Who would you say your early inspirations were?
I think it was, as an artist, it was an artist called MF Doom.
Oh, man.
Right?
I love
because
R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. MF Doom. I think it was because of the way that he rhymed, the way that he put lyrics together, the way that he could create a broken structure, leave rhymes for interpretation. You could go back to a song and hear it differently every single time. Like, I think he has an amazing way of doing that. And that then evolved me. So when I went to uni, I was then like, I want to be in a band. I want to do something different. And I met these musicians. They all kind of lived around where I lived on off campus. Mm-hmm. And we started jamming together. And that was a new foray because I'm like, okay, I'm used to like a beat that has structure. Whereas we've got one guy who's playing the drums, one guy that's playing guitar, one guy that's playing a bass. And we're like working it out together, kind of freestyling over it. And I think it was because I was able to listen to so much MF Doom. Mm-hmm. I was able to create a rhyme in a way that just kind of worked, and we worked it out, and then eventually we formed a band that lasted like 5 years, recorded our own album and stuff, did a lot of event, a lot of performances. I definitely think it was down to that influence of MF Doom primarily. You know, influenced by hip hop, influenced by grime, influenced by drum and bass as well. So I had I had quite a lot of experience in these different arenas. Mm-hmm. As I then became a performing artist with live musicians. And that honestly is the favourite thing. I love that more than anything. Even now, we haven't played together for over 10 years, but they were really special times and we were a very unique sounding band at that moment. Yeah. I would say that also just looking at entrepreneurs that came out of like hip hop, mm-hmm. that was quite inspiring because I got to learn that, you can grow and then you can do something. You can launch a clothing line, you know, you can launch different things, or you can have a crew like 50 Cent with G-Unit. You can have a crew.
That was massive.
But you bring people through and you'll create music together. It just showed you that you can grow from your positions. And I think that's something that kind of sat in the back of my mind as I grew, as I went to uni, as I then became a videographer, mm-hmm. you could call it at that time, to then launching my own video production company.
Yeah, no, that's an amazing journey, and all those experiences and influences. Now coming to musically unorthodox, how was the brainchild of that with all the experience that you had in Daniel? How did that come about? Because it would be interesting to know how that actually, the conception of that is, because I'm not native to Northampton. I don't know the lore as such to, you know, the backstories to all this stuff. But how did that come about? Because that's always interesting as well.
So I knew Daniel through, when I started at my upper school at the time, he was in sixth form and I was in year nine, and one of his younger brothers was in my year. So we kind of knew each other thereabouts. And then years go by, and it was actually in London, because the video production company I set up in 2015, it was with someone in London. So I was traveling down there quite a lot, like, you know, three times a week or so. And it was in the underground. I bumped into Dan. I was like, "Yo, what's going on?" He told me he just had a new child and we were catching up. So yeah, we took each other's numbers and we kind of then understood, like, we got an idea of what we were both doing at that mm-hmm. time. I was doing video production and Dan was going down to schools and delivering like workshops mm-hmm. and alternate provisions for schools around the country. And then in lockdown hit and we reconnected again, and he showed me what he'd been up to, where things were within music and media, and then like the birth of Musically Unorthodox as well. Mm-hmm. And then he'd had some funding to support some artists in creating their own song. And then lockdown hit, so it meant that he had to do it all remotely, mm-hmm. which is quite interesting because he kind of helped them break down songs, pick chord patterns, like program it all on through Zoom, through on Logic and stuff like that. And I did the voiceover for like the overview video.
That's sick, yeah.
And then the project went well and he was called again to get more funding or for another project. And he was like, "Well, I've already made it virtual. Like, what would be the next step?" And they said, "Well, we want you to have your own space to do this in." Mm-hmm. He told me that and I was like, "Yep, let's do it."
Yeah.
Running around the town looking for different places. And I found one that was almost right. And from that moment, I couldn't sleep for like 3 days. I was like, "We're getting close. This is going to happen." And then, talking to people. Spoke to someone that, again, I hadn't seen in like 10 years. We used to go to school together. And then she connected me with someone who rang me and said, "I heard you're looking for space." I was like, "Yeah." And we were invited to a space, which coincidentally was one of the spaces where I practiced in before the Dreams to Reality performance.
Oh.
It used to be a rehearsal rooms for bands and artists. And yeah, the stage was set. We got a great amount of space in that building, and we were able to set up In Music and Media and run the Musically Unorthodox project from a base.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And I think that also just shows kind of like the power of collaboration. And I think someone just said, and it's always a quote that I like, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, you know, go together. So I think that thing of two people coming with their own skill set, your experiences, his experiences, and then saying, you know what, how can we kind of build something greater than ourselves? And it's not even a way, it's a competing way, but it's like, you know what, we're actually bringing value to a certain thing. So I really like to see that. And even with a provision like us, because at Free to Talk, we do something similar, but it's not the same things that they do at Musically Unorthodox. So it's like, we're never competing in that regard. It's actually, well, you guys are bringing a certain value that we can't, and we're bringing a certain thing that you can't do. But if we kind of collaborate with those things together, then that always works out and always brings unity, and it's where we're actually stronger there. Another question I would have is like, what was the idea behind also the conferences and the events? Because they've been really good. All the ones I've attended have been really professional, really good. I've always got so much information from those. I always look forward to having them in the springtime there. So what was the brainchild behind that as well?
Well, I think it was that aspect of doing something that needed to be done, doing something that was a big gap, a massive gap in Northampton. There is no real spokespeople. There's no real platform for access to the creative industry. You know, through in the whole model of In Music and Media is to work with these young people at, if they're neat, if they're talented, if they're if they're going through Young Care, if they're going through any of these adverse situations, then be able to come to us as a provision to for us to work with them in the way that works for them, for them to then get something out of it that unlocks a creative employability, normal employability, more knowledge within their industry, and for them to be ready to either move on or feed back into the system that you know, supported them to grow. And we've actually had a few students that have gone full circle and are now with us at the studio facility. And I think that's one element. And the other element with Musically Unorthodox is really a platform. You know, we're there to support these young people, to showcase these young people, to be a space where they can learn news around the industry. And then ultimately we have the conference each year, which discusses some of the most important challenges that the different elements of further education, the industry, access to the industry, you know, how important it is for youth intervention to have these creative spaces. You know, there's a lot of different topics that get discussed. And that's really, really why the conference exists, as that extension, as that marker for where the industry needs to go next, and how can it support our young people, especially the ones that are coming from adverse scenarios anyway.
Yeah. I think that's really important, because even someone like myself, I see it, there isn't always that guidance. And it's like, when young people turn a certain age, they think they're supposed to have things figured out. And I'm like, no, that's a bit difficult. It's like, I didn't have my life figured out. It's at 16 or 18 like that. So it's always good to have those people who are like, no, you can do this option, because I'll have a limited option. But if someone's gone there before me, and when I was talking about mentors, they have seen past you, they have seen before you, so they can kind of give you those avenues. So, but what has been the biggest challenges for you? Because I was talking about mentoring. So it's like, you can kind of say, I've been through this challenge before. Then you can kind of pass that on to the young people. What has been maybe the biggest challenge for you in your life so far, or for Musically Unorthodox? Okay, let's start with your life first, and then we can maybe go to Musically Unorthodox as well.
I think I'd rather speak from my personal perspective. Yeah. I can shed a little bit of light on Musically Unorthodox and Music and Media. But I think personally, it was taking on and launching a restaurant while I already had at least three different projects on.
Wow.
Video production company, a podcast, and In Music and Media. And I'd not launched a restaurant before. But the opportunity was presented to me to have a restaurant that was fully furnished, ready to go. I said yes. And again, you said earlier, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I went fast on that project. I went really fast on it. I jumped into it with two feet. And it was a learning lesson, and it was very stressful. It took a lot of energy. It was rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned the business of food very quickly within, you know, within about a year, you kind of know where you're going.
Yeah.
As you reach year two, you're like, okay, you're a bit more battle hardened to things that could happen along the road. But it meant that I had that that restaurant for about 18, 20 months, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Knocked it on the head, just short of 2 years to move into pop-ups, less stress, less financial, etc. But that was definitely a learning lesson, and if you want to go fast, go alone. Because mm-hmm. I went fast, I got it all up.
Yeah.
But really, in reality, if I was to do that again, mm-hmm. I would have looked for some people that wanted to be invested in it.
Yeah.
Not just invest in money, but in terms of like, okay, we've all got a share in this.
Yeah.
We're all going to see it through. And then it would have gone far. It would have probably still been there now if it had mm-hmm. the right people with it. But some lessons in life are for you to learn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you can learn, then I can impart that. If anyone wants to start up a business now, a restaurant or a food business, I can say, well, these are the things you need to look at, you know, and what happens when your back's against the wall? Do you have a backup plan? There's a lot of things that you don't learn until you're really like waist deep in the quicksand and you're thinking, wow, I need to get out of this. This is tough. I would say with an alternate provision like in music and media, it's really, I'd say the challenge or the goal is to make sure that you get as many young people up and active within the industry that they want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they might come to your AP and they may not necessarily want to carry on or go into the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
Or the creative realms, video production, but it's about looking at, okay, well, what is it that you do and how can we support you while you're here to be there?
Yeah.
You know, whether it could be a plethora of things, but, you know, it's looking at it from that lens as well to be like, okay, how can we prepare you past here? Because we know that, you know, I was just at a meeting with some ex-teachers and stuff and, mm-hmm. one of them was saying that, yeah, you know, you invest all this time into these young people to get them a good grade, let's say, and then the last day you see them is when they pick up their grades and they tell you what they've got or you get to see what they've got. Mm-hmm. And then you don't, you know, there's not a system in place for you to catch up with them, to mm-hmm. support them further than that. And obviously it's not necessarily a teacher's job to do that,
mm-hmm.
but that level of aftercare is important.
Yeah.
You know, ensuring that someone knows or has an idea of what they've just done and how it can help them get somewhere else.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you touched on a very good point, because the same way record labels have, in a way, like an A&R of finishing school, they understand, okay, this artist has a talent. How can I bring that talent to that? How can I sharpen it and make it better? And sometimes it's like schools kind of give young people the tools, but they don't give them the tools to really sharpen them and say, okay, I can make this applicable to this area, because you just give them information, but information without the knowledge, without the expertise, without the guidance is just information.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what I'm glad that APs are able to do a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. They're able to bring more expert people in that can say, this is how this works. That is how that works. You know, this is how you convert this to that. That is how you convert this to this. And I think that that's why APs are, it's just growingly important in the climate we're in now. And I think that number one, education formally needs to evolve.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're scared to do it and stuff, but you don't have to evolve too much, but you just evolve to the skill sets that are needed and necessary for today. Because if you do that, you're going to have more engaged students going into things, you know. But I guess the other challenge for that is that a lot of specialist people and experts don't necessarily want to work in a school. You know, they're going to be in facilities, they're going to be in their industry. So there is a challenge there, because it's going to be rarer that you find someone that studied film technology or music technology and then they want to work in a school, unless that school is, you know, I heard earlier that in Germany they have, once a student gets to about 14, they have the academic route mm-hmm. or the technical route.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a system like that yet, but if we did, it would allow things to become a bit more straightforward on what your path could be.
Yeah.
And that then allows the industry that's there to receive you
to
then tailor the entry pathway better with that education, because it's not a one-size-fits-all thing.
Yeah.
There's at least two choices, and it narrows it down a little bit more.
Oh, my gosh. I could go on my soapbox about this, because I've been saying this for a long time, because it's such an archaic system, but because people are creatures of habit, even if something doesn't make sense, people will still kind of instill it. If it's a culture, because there's a culture of like, we have to do it this way. It's worked like this for a long time. So people are now adverse to having different things. Like, for example, I would want youth workers to be in schools because, like, sometimes, like, teachers can't handle that.
They can't handle it.
They can't handle all of the complexity. So I'm like, if there's a youth worker in school, then that can help. Or if you have a provision like yours, then they'll be like, okay, this child is behaving this way. Let's find out why. And if that's not working for them, let's find an alternative that's already in the school instead of taking them out of school. And then they feel like, oh, I am some sort of weird creature that I need to be taken out of school from.
This is it. You know, I spoke to the headmaster of CE Academy, which is one of the biggest schools for young people that have been excluded in the region. They've got quite a few different campuses. Yeah. And I said, like, if there's one thing you could change, what would it be about education? And he said, well, you see facilities like yours, alternate provisions, right? There's a range of them that all do these different things that can engage young people. But he said the challenge is for them to get to these alternate provisions, they have to go through all of this trauma.
Yeah.
All of this trauma. They have to be, you know, things go wrong at school, they get expelled. They're then without a school, they then have to find a new school. They then have to fit into the school. They've got prejudices, they've got labels, they've got trauma. So by the time they get to you, they might be good in your environment, but there's a lot of stuff that they've had to deal with that is probably not resolved because, you know, it's not really normal for people to have the right ways to process trauma when they're young. Let's say as you get older, you might have different ways or you might be able to listen to certain things or do certain practices that can help you release it. But it's a big thing in our society now. And also, like, kids need that third space that has eroded, right? They haven't got as many youth centres, you know, they haven't got as many, like, places where they're going to be around different communities. You know, if they go to church, maybe they get that church, or they have, if they go to a football team or martial arts, there are certain things, but there's not many for the creative kind of kids. 100%. I mean, we're in one now, obviously we're here at Inspiration.
There are very few ones, though.
You know, there's very few, you know, we've got our facility. I think there's a few other provisions around the town and the county, but there's not many.
Yeah, that's 100% too, because we've been doing a survey about the town centre, and we're like, we were looking at what's actually affordable for young people to do. It's like most of the things that are creative, you have to pay. There's pay barriers. Young people, it's like there's very few spaces like yours or ours where young people can just go there and have that kind of safe space, like the third space thing you refer to. And that's even going away in society because people are just not even going to the pubs. They're going straight home because it's expensive.
Exactly.
So it's not just a phenomenon for our young people in the creative space, but it's almost like a corporate thing that's happening in society as well. So it's made it really, really difficult. But I'm happy, like, right now we're having this conversation and recognize it because that needs to change. And I would love to see more places because we get inundated with young people. Sometimes we don't even know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they attend decisions. But I'm like, because we're not a lot of us, we can't help all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can say, oh, no, go to Ashley, go to wherever, then it helps all of us. But unfortunately, there aren't enough of those provisions. There's not even enough investment. There's not enough innovation to actually allow these spaces to thrive. So it's not where, like what you said, they've gained so much trauma. So it's like, okay, now you can go there.
Yeah.
Where it can be that early intervention. It's like, okay, we recognize maybe something's going on with this young person. That's why I was like, even youth workers, it's like, oh, no, you can just do this instead.
Yeah, if you had the youth workers in place in these schools, they can be a bit more on the ground, especially if they can be trusted by the students. And then they can be a bit of a port of call or a place of direction. So, okay, look, you should go here. You know, I'll make a referral for you. You should go here. And it engages them more because it's tough out there. It's a lot more. And because a lot of these young people don't have these third spaces. They're going to school, they're going home. They're sitting on phones, they're talking to everyone digitally. They lose the ability to be able to be in certain situations that mean that you have to grow. You have to learn how to articulate yourself a little bit better because you might have fallen out with someone that you're in an external project with, and then you have to come and say, you know what, this is that, that is this. You know, I shouldn't have done it that way. You have to face certain things. And the challenge is, what I'm kind of seeing, is that they don't have to face certain things. So then everything becomes very hyper sensitive.
Yeah.
It's like they're sensitive to someone putting a post on a comment on Instagram. It might even be an AI bot.
Yeah.
Or in terms of youth violence, someone says something about another guy's clique or another guy, then they're running on the streets with knives just like that because they haven't found those ways of reasoning with people, not bargaining, but negotiating with people, debating with people, those kind of skills are so important. And you only usually find those, well, if you've got a family unit where that is commonplace or that's open and accepted, brilliant. You might have people that you can have a good debate with. And I know growing up, there was a few spaces like that for me and my friends where we could have a good debate around the table. Whether we got on or whether we didn't, it didn't matter. We just had a debate, and that fire might come into your chest at points and you learn how to deal with it. Whereas if you don't have those spaces, you don't have that outlet, the teachers have got a predisposed bias to you being a troublemaker, your parents are having difficulties or they're split up and you never dealt with that trauma, where do you go? You know, where do you release? And that's one of the biggest challenges that we face these days, as the kind of more nuclear family units aren't as prevalent as they used to be.
We're getting really deep into this conversation, and I like it because it's really touching home at the issues a lot of these young people face. And I think maybe sometimes adults, because I think it's a different era. Because I think I'm going to presume as me, you are maybe a 90s baby because I'm a 90s baby myself, and I'm like, things have totally changed from then. Like then you could literally just say, "Oh, mom, I'm leaving," and then go home. Go out and then come back, and then but like there's so much going on. People take their words with them on their phones everywhere.
Yeah.
So they're literally moving with the whole universe in their pockets. And I don't think maybe adults will understand their complexities, even with the pressure of certain things. You see certain things on social media and I'll be like, oh, how can I be like this? How can I? There's so much pressure that I think a lot of the adults don't understand that the young people are facing these days. But what do you think that the solutions are this, actually, quick question. What do you think, if you could solve a certain thing, what do you think
solution.
The solution, because we've been ranting for a bit, we've been on our soapboxes, what do you think the solution is?
I would say it would need the creative industry. Well, I always look it through the creative lens, because to me that seems like one of the biggest industries that doesn't have the easiest and most simple entry route. It would be industries having the correct avenues through schools to young people so that things are in the curriculum that can be directly applicable to their later life. One of the challenges or the barriers is obviously the cost of living and the challenges we're having now, where qualified people are going for entry-level jobs and getting them because the boss is like, wow, this guy's really, really qualified. I'll hire him over hiring a 16 or an 18-year-old that doesn't know what they're doing. So it's becoming very difficult down the chain for employment or decent, livable employment opportunities. So the solution would be that buy-in that allows the amplification, again, I'm being totally biased here, but for creative careers, and they need some better modules within schools or better courses in school that are more equipped for the digital age we're in now. You know, video editing, audio editing, AI prompting, marketing. Social media is a tricky one because obviously it's not ideal to have young people's minds on social media all the time. And if you're doing that kind of work, it does consume you. I'm sure you've done it. I've done it. You're sitting there
100% all the time,
creating posts and stuff. I mean, I had to do it early. So that is a challenging bit, but you just put an age restriction on that, or you teach them the skills around it, the frameworks, because it's unlikely that the creative industry jobs are going to go away. No. We consume more and more media. They consume more and more media. So at least if they have a better idea on how to craft it and how to design it and how it works, they can be more of a contribution, because, 20 years ago, it was rare that a business would be able to afford to make their own video and sit on their website, because it was very, very expensive. Whereas now, those skills are in everybody's, I would imagine 99.5% of people have a phone that has a camera.
Yeah.
You can get them that don't. There are a few people that are anti-tech, but, they're there. So I would say just that push could help a lot of the young minds that are now becoming disenfranchised and disconnected from the traditional ways of education.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good solution, and I think things like what you're doing already are already kind of like shifting that balance in that small way. We can't change every young person's life, course, that's not practical. Maybe if we got more funding, that would definitely help. Like more money, but like more money in the right direction. I think sometimes, and someone who's not foreign, and I've seen it in myself, where I come from, people don't get a lot of opportunity. Mm. So when I come here and I see that, I'm like, it's not really about the money, but it's where you're channeling the money. And I'm like, where is all the money going? Because I'm like, yes, it's great that we have schools, but like we need to get where actually the young people are going, like the youth clubs, like those third places, like to actually help them, because they are fitting a need, because the teachers are inundated. Yeah. Like, do teachers even want to be teachers anymore? Because it's become so difficult. So I think it's just not saying spending a lot of money, but already equipping the people who are already doing the work on the ground anyway and helping them. I'm saying, what can we do to help you? That's a starting point. I don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
I don't think we can solve it, but saying, okay, who's actually making a difference? Identifying the people who are making that difference and saying, how can we help you do your job better?
That's it. How can we help you develop more? Because for me and Daniel, I know we spoke about it a little while ago. It's like, if we can just affect one positively, and I believe, you know, to you know, our own horn, but I'm sure we've affected more than that through the young people that have come through. We've got some really, really talented ones that are developing well. And I think that's it. You know,
do you have any, talking about that, do you have any successful case studies you want to talk about? Like, not mentioning names, of course, but
we've got one young person that comes in on a good day, he'll produce 3 beats, like good beats, right? And we're just encouraging him to build up his YouTube channel. Built up his YouTube channel, someone saw it, bought a beat off him for like £90. This young person's like 15 now.
That's amazing.
Right? So we're just saying, keep doing that. You're doing the right things. Keep perfecting your craft. Keep learning and you'll be there. Right? And he's getting on with it. He's doing really well. And I think that's one of our greatest case studies. We've got a few others that come in quiet, reserved, find their voice, and then you can't get them out of the studio singing. You know, like we've had quite a few of those. So there's quite a few case studies, and I'm sure there's bound to be more, because I'm really fired up for this kind of work. It invigorates me more than anything, many other things that I've found in life, really, in terms of that positive effect you can have and that third space that you can be to enable more people to be who they want to be in the world.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I agree with you. Like, for me, seeing a young person kind of achieve their potential and kind of find what they like doing, for me, is like one of the happiest things. Because I think school is great and all, but I always say to young people, if your thing involves the grades, then get the grades. But if it's not, find what you enjoy doing and pursue that.
Yeah.
School will always be there. You can always go back to school, but what you actually want to do may not always be there. You might not always have the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
School usually will be there, or even if it's uni. If you don't want to go uni, don't go uni. But pursue whatever it is that you find your passion in. And because that will usually keep you out of trouble. And I feel like a lot of the times is why we find our young people who are unruly, or we say they're problematic, is that they don't have a purpose outside themselves. Unless it's hedonistic, it's like, oh, I'm going to go drink, I'm going to school. That's not an issue. It's like they're spending on their time because they think they'll get fulfillment out of that. But if they realize, no, if I pick up a pen and write some bars, if I go to the studio and make some beats, I will actually find purpose in doing that. And it's actually giving them something to do and curing that boredom. And it goes back to another thing I said about the thing we're doing in the town center. The reason why a lot of the people, young people in the town center, are doing nothing is because they're not being given a purpose.
Yeah.
If we give them a purpose and say, you can write bars, you can do this, or you want to be a doctor, give them the opportunity for free to do that. That's what they'll do. Mm. But unfortunately, they're not always given the opportunity, or they have the right mentors. Mm. But hopping on what I'm saying, what advice would you give your younger self, maybe when you're 15, 16 right now, what advice would you give your younger self?
Good question. I think it would have been to inquire more into some of the areas I was interested in and research more into those to find people I could have spoke to about certain things. You know, I think that's the key. I kind of very lucky to have, you know, Mark from Inspiration.
Yeah.
He'd seen us come up from, you know, whenever it was, 14, 15, put us on stages, got us to events, supported us in this very room. We did some workshops and stuff in here. And
it's come full circle.
Yeah, it was like 20 years ago he was in here. So I think that would be it for me, asking more questions around how things work at a slightly higher level than entry.
Mm.
and asking for more opportunities to do things that had a slightly higher responsibility level. Like I remember my first real job was in catering at the cricket ground. And I was there doing my job, you know, in the daytime and stuff. And I always looked at the manager or the assistant manager and what he was doing and just thinking, well, he's not really doing that much. He's just organising us. But I never reached out to my boss and said, please, can you teach me what he does, you know, so that I can be of more use here.
Yeah.
I can be more use to myself. I never thought about it like that. And I think those were the things I would have said to my younger self. Ask those questions more. Be a little bit bolder to show that you can be a bit more useful.
Yeah.
And you're willing to learn more. And, you know, things have worked out. I don't feel like it's really held me back that much, not asking it at that point. But now I'll ask. If I see something, I say, how do you do that?
Yeah.
I'll be, you know, in open ears. But I guess it's because I've been through a lot to understand that if someone knows what they're doing, that is the sum of hours, days, weeks, months, years to get it to a perfected art. And with that that they've learned, they can shorten your time to learn it, or at least your comprehension of what they're doing.
Yeah, 100%. And this is why I think I'm so big on mentors, because someone said, you know what, there aren't many cheat codes in life, but if you have a mentor, it's a cheat code, because they've probably been where you have been, and they can kind of like shorten that gap, and you actually get the most out of them, because they're not learning anything, but you can absorb so much from them, especially good mentors. And that's why there's like anti-mentors, like of course people in gangs and stuff who do the exact opposite, but having a good mentor cuts half of the nonsense that you can actually deal with. So that's why I'm so big about this. And even having someone like you on this platform and on the community of practice, because it's like, how can young people get those gems and say, okay, you know what, actually had a point here about asking questions. Maybe I'm going to apply that too. So having this platform is to kind of help those young people who may not be in here physically in this conversation, but they can actually kind of get the wisdom. Because for me, anything I can learn from Mark, I want to try and absorb, or anything from any of my colleagues, I'm like, I'm trying to absorb that information, because they've probably been somewhere I haven't been, but I've got the knowledge from all of that, the heartbreak, the tears, all the struggles that they've been through. So I like, mentors are probably the most underrated thing and maybe underutilized things that we can have to use. And I it's just beautiful to learn, even from someone like you. It would be beautiful to like pick your brain more. And talking about that, I know you said MF Doom is one of your favorite artists. I don't know if it's your favorite. Is that your top five, dead or alive? Do you have a top five artists, top rappers?
Five. Okay, yeah, so top five. I'll put MF Doom in there. I'll put DWE in there in terms of a UK artist that I heard one of his freestyles. This is when we just first heard out about grime and managed to find some artists. We're downloading them, and there was one particular clip that was just like quintessential early grime, like, you know, pirate radio, a clip for about 2 minutes, him and Kano. And I couldn't stop listening to it. I was like, this is incredible, the way he flows. So D-Double in there. MF Doom for his abstract nature. Yeah. Ooh, who else can go in this top five? Ocean Wisdom is one of the youngest, one of the more younger UK rappers that's incredibly, incredibly talented and very varied in the kind of music he produces. Top five artists.
It's always tricky.
Bob Marley for the inspiration. Again, it took me a few years to becoming a teenager till I understood his words properly. And when that happened, I was like, wow, it opened my mind to so many things. And then I got one more.
Whoa, the last spot is always tricky.
Last spot.
Always tricky. You can have some honorable mentions as well.
James Brown. Oh. James Brown for the vibes. Honourable mentions, Lauryn Hill's got to be in there. Oh,
she's amazing.
Who else? Guru Jazmataz from Gangsta. He can be in there for someone
else. Yeah, Guru. R.I.P. Guru.
R.I.P. Guru. De La Soul in there.
Oh, fire.
Kalashnikov from the UK again. UK rapper that was a bit of a pioneer in how at the time he came out.
Yeah. Is there anything that you want to promote that you want to shout out to, or anything that's any upcoming projects or anything that you're working on before we close off our podcast? Is there anything that you'd like to promote?
I would say that we've got quite a lot coming at Musically Unorthodox and in music and media. So for people that are interested in developing their own personal skills, we'll have some projects coming up where there'll be some residencies available and different ways they can get involved and develop. So I would just say, if you're interested in anything that I spoke about, have a look on our Instagrams, have a look on our websites, find my details. I'm sure we can put on my LinkedIn, my Instagram. 100%. Contact me and we can keep it moving. Whatever you need to know, I'm sure I can help or signpost. And if there's anything you want to be involved in, I'm sure we can make that happen too.
No, 100%. No, this, we are on 40 minutes. So it's felt like we've been talking for 10 minutes, quite honestly. No, it's been a very, very good conversation, very thought-provoking. I don't know if you have any last advices for young people or anything like that. Anything you want to say before we sign off?
I would say it would be the same advice I would have gave my younger self. Don't be afraid to ask questions. The only stupid question you ask is the one that you didn't ask. You can never be too curious. You can never be too inquisitive. You can never be too interested in a subject. So keep asking, keep researching. You've got the world of Instagram, TikTok, AI now, which can give you so many different answers on so many different things within lightning speed. We had to wait for dial-up connections. kilobytes per second. They don't even know about that. It's megabytes.
LimeWire
and WinMX
was terrible.
And stuff like that, right?
If someone tried to call you, yeah, your connection's done.
Knocked out. First song that ever downloaded took 5 hours.
Now, they don't know the struggle of being patient, that they're so privileged, you know. But like I would say, privilege is invisible to the privilege, but it is what it is. It comes with the generation. Just, but
as you said, you have the universe in the palm of your hand now. Utilize it where you can. Yeah. Don't let it utilize you too much.
True.
You know, look for things and allow it to enrich your life and enrich your thinking, because that's where it's all at.
Yeah, no, wise words from Ashley. Thank you so much for coming on short notice. Thank you. It was a brilliant conversation. Hopefully we can have you next time as well, and maybe even have more people and maybe bring them in. We have a bigger podcast and have Mark Dean on there, and we can even talk about it and have like a full circle story and have Daniel on as well. That would be amazing to have that actually a part two. Hopefully. Yeah. I'm speaking it into existence, guys.
There we go, man.
Yeah, well, it's going to happen. Stay tuned, everyone. So this is Craig Shanna signing out from our community of practice. It was a pleasure to have Ashley, and see you part two very, very soon.
Yeah, see you soon.
Thank you, guys. Cheers. Bye.